The John Gilbert Show on 610 KDAL.
John Gilbert back here with you, going to the second hour, and we're going to hang on and have some more Zachary Richard, Sunset on Louisiana. Great environmentalist anthem by Zachary Richard, Cajun singer. We have Ryan Kearns on the line with us. Ryan, we go back a long way, you and I, and I'm really impressed with all the things you've done with these all-star sports games, starting with hockey, but now you're into balloons and air shows and drag races and all that. It's an amazing industry that you've generated on your own.
Well, I appreciate that, John. You know, events are fun. You know, we enjoy doing them, and you're absolutely right. You and I go way back to the mid to late 1990s. So, yeah, we've known each other quite a long time.
And you've just done a fantastic job. And now the thing that's got you all started out was when you put together the all-star hockey game between the high school seniors in Duluth against the high school seniors on the Iron Range. And the whole plan was for guys, so few kids from here were getting scholarships at the time. I think you excluded those who already had scholarships, did you not, at first?
Well, you know, it was always as I like to say when we first started the conversation, the event has gone through many what I'm going to say is slight revisions in the way that we put it together. But the original game actually was picked by, and I love to say this, we started the concept in 1998 for the 98-99 high school hockey season, and we determined that we were going to line up the best high school hockey players from Duluth against the best of the Iron Range. There was so much history there, and a lot of those schools didn't get a chance to play each other because, of course, you still had you had some single A and double A schools, and so you were going to miss some of that. And we thought, what a great way to showcase our region's hockey and really showcase northern Minnesota. And it all came down to that the Twin Cities market were promoting the heck out of their high school kids, and there really was no way for us as a community to really promote some of the best hockey players we had here in our region.
Well, and that's what's terrific, and now it's gone every year since 99, eh?
It has. You know, like I said, we first consulted. I remember it was Mark Fleischer and I sat down, and we hammered out kind of a plan and how we're going to do this. I know you and I had many conversations as well,
right,
about putting this thing together and how we were going to do it. In the first year, in 99, we did it as a senior-only event. And the teams were literally picked by the media. You had input. Mark Fleischer had input. Chris Long had input. Who was at Channel 3 at the time.
Right.
And between the four of us, we sat down and we actually picked the original team in 1999. And we did that in the same way in 2000 as well. And again, it was seniors only at that time. Well, as we like to say, good things evolve. And what we did is we kind of took it out of our hands in terms of media and an event producer. And we then turned it over to the coaches themselves. And we then allowed them to nominate players from their teams. And then once we had kind of a compilation of a roster, we then had the coaches then vote on the players. So once we got into the 2001 season, it became very democratic in terms of giving everybody an equal opportunity to get in. And that's also the same time. Then we kind of moved away from the senior only concept because what we found was a lot of the kids that were seniors were not playing in the All-Star game. Because they were going to play juniors, or they were
right,
going to that next step, or they had they were into another sport,
and that still happens, correct?
It does, but not as much. I mean, because now we're not just taking seniors anymore. So now we're doing juniors and seniors. So by virtue of that, it kind of did two things. It allowed us to bring in the best talent. Period. But we also realized that during the early infancy of the event, that a lot of those seniors who were good enough to go on and play, they were going to leave. Most likely they weren't going to play in the All-Star game. But we knew that we had some juniors coming up who most likely would also be moving on to a Division I career or possibly into the minor leagues or the NHL. So it was a good way for us to include them into the event a year early.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, now the big news, of course, is that it happens tonight.
It does.
At Amsoil Arena, and it's a 7 o'clock game, but you have a skills competition at 6 p.m., and just to run off some of the names, Everyone knows from Hermantown's wonderful state Class A championship. You got Eric Goetz on defense, Ryan Sandlin and up front, and Luke Olson in goal, which is gives it a great boost. And Duluth East has Alex Spencer, a defenseman, Shea Donovan, a defenseman, Luke Dow, a forward, Ashton Altman, a forward, and Ryan Peterson, a forward. So you got a whole line there.
Yep.
And River Alander from Duluth Denfeld in goal, and a kid like Shane Tetzlaff from Superior, Peter Lenz from Marshall, Adam Shikes from Denfeld, Cole Litzy from Cloquet Esco Carlton, Lane Crenzen from Marshall, and Tanner Kettle from North Shore, and Dylan Johnson also from Cloquet Esco Carlton. Right. But then, you know, the neat thing is I've told people that, you know, the amazing thing about Hermantown's Class A championship is that they beat some really good teams, and nobody ever knows how good Hibbing and Greenway are unless they saw the section finals and semifinals.
Right.
They have really good teams, and Hermantown hammered them on their way to the state. But now you get a kid like Scott Perunovich, who some people say is as good as there is in the state. He's only a junior defenseman at Hibbing. But what a great player. Jake Bestel from Hibbing and from Greenway, which has had a resurgent year. Defenseman Dylan Sundquist, forward Cole Kalish, Taylor Lance, another forward, and Mike Ledoux, a goaltender, all from Greenway. Grand Rapids, which makes the state tournament. Alex Adams, who will, if the game comes down to the closing seconds, I'm picking him to score the winning goal.
Right.
Because he did it against East with 6 seconds left, and then he did it in overtime at the state tournament. So that was pretty awesome. And teammates of his, Micah Miller, who was lit up the Excel Center, was a great player in the tournament for Grand Rapids. Jonah Bischoff is also there. Jason Keen and Brendan Mark. So, but you also have like Nicholas Westerholm, goaltender from Virginia, and Wyatt Boyan from International Falls, and a couple guys from way up north. Well, Evelith Gilbert, Aaron Koivunen, and Nick Przybylski. And then Jade Cole from Warroad and Bryden Skoskoff from Roseau. So you got quite a team. You got George McDonald of International Falls coaching the range team, and Kevin Smalley of Denfeld coaching the Duluth team. It's and the process has worked out for you, hasn't it?
It really has, you know, because when you start looking at these teams, the amount of talent, if you just take a look at the individual talent in terms of players, both teams are really stacked, and these are opportunities that, you know, from a spectator standpoint, you don't ever get a chance to see the really good players from Duluth East play with the really good players from Marshall and Hermantown and Cloquet, and they play on the same team.
Right.
And so what we're finding is that when you can take a really good player and you surround him with other really good players, it gives that particular, you know, player an opportunity to shine. And it makes the whole team better. And then when you go up against the other competition on the other side, that's just as stacked with Northern Minnesota's best hockey players. It's a sight to behold, because either one of these teams, if you take the teams just as they are, you know, both of these teams, just based on the way the Duluth team and the Iron Range team, you know, imagine sending one of those teams down to the state tournament.
Exactly.
And just, I mean, because if you're saying, well, look, we can add all the kids from East and the kids from Hermantown and some of these other kids from Cloquet, now let's send them out there and compete AA and let's see what they can do then.
Right.
You know, and the best gauge that I like to say is what the amount of talent that's on the ice comes down to one thing. A few years ago, we took some of the kids from the high school all-star team. We actually did it. We did a merge squad. So we took some kids from Duluth. We took some kids from the Iron Range. We formed one team, which was the St. Luke's CCM team that we brought. We then went and played some teams in the North American Hockey League. No contest.
Really?
We walked all over them.
Wow. And
so it tells you that the amount, the quality of talent that we have here in Duluth and the Iron Range is fantastic. I mean, just, you know, there's Division I players playing. There's Division III players playing. There's potential draft picks NHL draft picks playing. So it's just a wonderful opportunity to really get a chance to come out and watch some amazing high school hockey and just watch these kids flourish.
Well, you know, and the neat thing, tell me a little bit quickly about the skills competition.
So tonight we're going to be doing four skills competition. We've got a fastest skater competition Shot accuracy is also tonight. We've got a breakaway drill that we do, and then also the harder shot. Those are the four skills competitions that we're going to put together tonight. Players from both teams participate in groups. And so that's going to start a little bit before 6 o'clock tonight, now that we have a really good idea of what time we're going to take the ice. A little bit before 6 o'clock, we'll start the skills competition. That's going to bring us all the way right to about 7 o'clock. And then the game will be starting after we get a chance to Zamboni the ice tonight.
That'll be phenomenal. That'll just be really fun to see. I can't wait. I always feel so excited about the state tournament, and when it ends, it's wonderful, but it's a real letdown to think, yeah, I know there's college and there's pro and all that, but it's kind of a letdown to see that, to think that high school just ended with such a great rise. And this is a wonderful way to kind of decompress your brain on high school hockey. You can see one more session of really outstanding high school hockey players going at it. That should be really fun.
And the thing to say, though, John, and I think you've seen this over the course of years, this is not an NHL All-Star game. So you're not going to see the kids, you know, just going out having fun playing high-scoring games. That's really not, it's not what this is.
Well, it might be high-scoring, but it won't because there's lax on defense.
Right, exactly. It's going to be intense. The level of intensity in this game is the absolute opposite of what we thought it was originally going to be. And part of the reason for that is that the kids are trying to make a mark. They're trying to showcase their talents. They're trying to showcase that the Iron Range has better hockey than Duluth, or Duluth has better hockey than Northern Minnesota. But at the end of the day, I mean, these kids are going out there to win. They're going out there to compete, and they have an audience. They have the NHL Central Scouting Bureau. They have NHL scouts. They have WCHA scouts, NCHC scouts, Division I scouts. There's junior scouts. You know, every year we have about 50 to 60 different scouts in attendance watching the players, because this is their final chance to make their mark, to give them some, you know, possible career opportunities in the future.
Well, that'll be. I was just going to make that comment too, that no matter how big a crowd you get, a large percentage of them are going to be scouts from somewhere.
Yeah.
So this is great. I know that at the state tournament you see guys, oh, yeah, there's a guy coaching out of the state, but he came here to watch a kid. Well, this is the way you get to see a whole bunch of prospects in one spot, and they must be gathering here and probably planning a mid-afternoon dinner already.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Well, Ryan, I appreciate the time. Thank you very much. This will be great fun. I look forward to seeing you tonight, and it'd be great to get a crowd. What's the price of tickets?
So tonight, adults are $7. It's really inexpensive. $7 for adults, $5 for students. Kids that are 12 and under, as long as they wear a youth hockey jersey, they'll get in free tonight.
Okay.
And so, yeah, we're hoping to get a good crowd out, and it means a lot to the players who are playing. The more people that come out to support them, it means a whole bunch to them.
Well, that's fantastic. We'll see you at Amsoil Arena bright and early. It's a little before 6. It'll be great fun.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Ryan.
Bye-bye.
Ryan Kern from Kearns & Company. Bring you balloon rides, air shows, all the All-Star games. An awesome job he's done. Make himself a self-made entrepreneur. We'll take a little break here. We'll be right back on the John Gilbert Show.
With your Wolves Minute, I'm John Fokey. Well, the Minnesota Timberwolves were in action last night in Charlotte, wrapping up a stretch of 4 straight games against the Eastern Conference. Wolves got off to a good start in this one, leading early, but then Charlotte would rip off an 11-0 run and take a 23-18 lead after one. Charlotte lead would swell to 16 in the second quarter before Minnesota put together a 14-0 run, and in fact, it was the Wolves out in front at the break, 49-47. In the third quarter, Kemba Walker caught fire. 21 of his points coming in that third quarter on 7 of 9 shooting. Charlotte closes the third on a 10-2 run, taking an 82-75 lead into the fourth quarter. Minnesota would fall behind by double digits early in that final frame. They battle back to make a game of it, but in the end come up short, 108-103. After the game, head coach Sam Mitchell.
I thought the first quarter we was a little lethargic. We weren't moving the ball, but kind of after we got into it, we started moving the ball. We started getting some quality shots. Some guys actually got back in the game and took the lead, but, you know, the guys run out of gas.
Wolves back at it tonight, hosting San Antonio. John Fokey on the North and Ford Dealer Timberwolves Radio Network.
AM 610 KDAL. News. Weather. Sports. It's games steeped with tradition. From the first days with Tony Campbell and Randy Brewer through the years with KG. And now to the new breed of stars.
Shabazz, the run out and the slam with the left hand. Goes up for the shot. Big catch. Blocked him. Here come the Wolves in transition.
Alan Horton and John Fokey cover all the action on and off the court, in the Target Center, and around the NBA.
Now to Shabazz, lobbing it to the rim. Oh, Carl Anthony Towns rises to the rafters and jams it through with two hands. Shabazz to the big cat, and the Wolves lead by nine with 2:50 to play.
Hey, it's John Fokey of the North and Ford Dealer Timberwolves Radio Network. Hope you can join us tonight. Wolves and Spurs from Target Center. It's a 7 o'clock tip-off, 6:30 pregame, right here on your home for Timberwolves basketball.
Catch Minnesota Timberwolves basketball on 610 KDAL and Sports Radio 970.
How many times in sports have you heard the phrase, "You just got your bell rung, you'll be okay, get back in the game"? Guess what? If you got your bell rung, you're probably not okay. You probably sustained a concussion, and going back in the game just might put your life in jeopardy. In high school sports, safety comes first. Use your head to learn more. Take a free online course at cdc.org/concussion. This message is brought to you by the Minnesota State High School League.
This week on Minnesota Military Radio, we talk with the Minnesota National Guard's Recruiting Command live from Craigens.
Committed to supporting our Northland military families. Minnesota Military Radio, Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock on 710 WDSM. So you want to bring something up to John? No worries. Email him at jgshow@mwcradio.com. The John Gilbert Show on 610 KDAL.
Lord, it's changing so damn fast, each and every day. 'Cause I love the river and I love the swamp.
All right, John Gilbert back here with you on the John Gilbert Show. We're awaiting a call from Scott Head, H-E-D. I mean, Head or Heed, I'm not sure, but he represents the Sportsman for the Boundary Waters, and he's going to be calling us to talk about the twin medals thing. That, you know, like Lee was talking about, Lee is primarily concerned with trying to preserve the integrity and the purity of the water in Lake Superior, which means you got to go upstream and try to head off the toxins before they can get there, which is why he's so vigorously opposed to Polymet. And there is this other company that's kind of laying in the weeds up there and by Ely. And Twin Metals Minnesota, which is a nice name for a company that's a subsidiary of a Chilean conglomerate, and they've gotten some old time permits that they, I get this feeling that there's sinister stuff going on. It's just my reporter's hunch, but I think that all these things coming together, they might be trying to lay low, let Polymet do all the fighting, and if my newest suspicion has any bearing. Polymet's going to go through all this wrangling to get beat up real bad by environmentalists and get all the way through and take a run to see if, kind of like when you've got second down and goal from the one, you might let your durable running back batter his way into the line, and if he makes it, fine, but if not, you still can do a rollout and throw a touchdown pass. My suspicion with that really strange analogy is that they're going to let Polymet batter into the line and try to score a touchdown. And if they get through and get their permits, then we still don't know if they're ever going to mine at Polymet, at that White Lakes thing, but they could sell the rights and the permits to a company like Twin Metals Minnesota that could then bypass all of that fighting and wrangling and political stuff and just have the permit in hand and say, here we go, let's build it. So that's why it was significant that Governor Dayton said he's not going to approve that, and he's not going to approve state land being traded for that sort of thing. So I'm anxious to talk to him when he calls, and he's going to call about 10:35, and we'll see what transpires there. So meanwhile, lots of other things going on, and you know the. All the praise that's gone to John Torchetti, and justifiably, replacing Mike Yeo in the Minnesota Wild, playing much better. Interesting story by Michael Russo in the Star Tribune today on their sports page about Mike Riley, the Gopher player who signed and played for the Wild. They wanted to put him in the lineup right away. He was really scattered defensively, so they sent him down to Iowa. came up a couple times and just sat and watched and tried to gather some feeling about it. Went back to Iowa, and of course, what we didn't hear was that Iowa had the worst record in the American League. They were really hurting. They had the worst record of all in the worst team in the American League. And Mike Riley was a minus 29. He had by far the worst plus-minus mark in the whole league. So his offensive skills were, you know, guys who have bad plus-minuses usually find a way to say it's not that important, and it was unlucky. But he's now at a minus 25. He's come up and played really well for the Wild. But in praising him, Michael Russo says that that in the American League that Iowa now has the second fewest point, but since December 26th, they're 15-11-2, which is very good. Well, when they were the worst team in the league, the coach was John Torchetti. Isn't that interesting? So now they're saying, they're making it sound like he's responsible for Riley's upsurge. Not necessarily. We'll take a break here for the CBS News and be right back
CBS
on the John
News
Gilbert
update.
I love Obama, so it's hard to replace him.
That Michigan voter in a quandary this primary day in a state that has 147 delegates for Democrats and Republicans have 59 at stake today.
I'm Dan Revive. Michigan is a major test for John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, just to the south, but the polls suggest he can't count on being in the top two today. Donald Trump's in the lead, taking note of anti-Trump commercials running especially in Florida, placed by Marco Rubio supporters.
See the money they spend? That are mostly phony ads.
Florida votes a week from today, considered to be Rubio's last chance.
Primary today for both parties in Mississippi, Republicans caucus in Hawaii and in Idaho. Fresh national poll shows Hillary Clinton's lead down to 49-42 over Bernie Sanders. Washington Post and ABC say for Republicans, Donald Trump has slipped, leading Ted Cruz now 42-25. CBS News update. I'm Dave Barrett.
Now, here's the latest from the 610 KDAL newsroom.
Good morning, 10:32 from the KDAL Newsroom. I'm Dave Strandberg. Minnesota Governor Dayton says he won't be allowing builders access to state land for a proposed copper nickel mine near the Boundary Waters Canoe Area. He released a letter yesterday to Twin Metals Minnesota stating he thought the environmental risk to the popular nature spot is just too high. Last week, a state agency approved a 10-year environmental review for another mining project planned by PolyMet. Dayton has yet to make up his mind whether to move forward on approving that mine. Minnesota legislature starts the 2016 session at noon today, like many of her northern Minnesota associates. Duluth Representative Jennifer Schultz hoping that some long overdue business will be taken care of early this week.
The very first item I hope we take up is to extend unemployment benefits to Iron Rangers miners that were laid off. Really controversial right now because it seems like the Republicans want to get something, to get that bill passed. So that might be more difficult than it seems.
At a hearing last week, House Republicans again tied benefit extensions to a tax break amendment. Schultz says that's an issue that can be taken up later, but wants the Speaker to keep his promise and bring a clean bill to a vote on unemployment extensions this week. The latest survey from the career agency Manpower shows employers in Minnesota expect to hire at an optimistic pace during quarter number two of 2016. Tasha Radel has more.
22% of the companies interviewed plan to hire more employees between April and June, while only 2% expect to reduce their payrolls. Another 76% expect to maintain current workforce levels. For the coming quarter, job prospects appear best in construction, manufacturing, transportation and utilities, wholesale and retail trade, information, and financial activities.
And flags will be flying at half-staff throughout Minnesota and Wisconsin. That's in honor of the late Nancy Reagan, the former First Lady, passing away Sunday at the age of 94. Governors Mark Dayton of Minnesota and Scott Walker of Wisconsin both ordering that all flags fly at half-staff until sunset on the day of Reagan's funeral. That's the latest from the KDAL Newsroom. Get more online at KDAL610.com.
Your Twin Ports forecast today, mostly cloudy, 50% chance of showers and a few thunderstorms, some patchy fog during the morning, high 48 near the lake, warmer inland, east wind at 5 to 10 will become southeast, then turn to the south during the afternoon. Tonight, mostly cloudy with some clearing late, low 31, partly sunny Wednesday, high 41, partly cloudy Wednesday night, low 25, Thursday, partly cloudy, high around 40. From the KDAL Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Mike Brunling.
News when it happens, and talk that matters. 610 KDAL. News. Talk. Sports. The shots, the saves, the goals, that sweet pass, that momentum-changing check, the history, the tradition, the fans, this team, this school, the shots, the saves, the goals, that sweet pass, that momentum-changing check, the history, the tradition, the fans, this team, this team. Hockey comes to life right here on the Gopher Sports Network.
The Gophers are back in action this weekend hosting the Wisconsin Badgers. Catch all the action Friday and Saturday night. Pre-game is at 6:30 on your home for the Gophers, 610 KDAL.
Welcome to your Medicare moment. To enroll in Medicare, most people need to contact Social Security directly before their 65th birthday to avoid a lapse in health coverage. Enrollment in various parts of Medicare is limited to certain times, and signing up late can cost you money. Medicare can be complicated. Call the Senior Linkage Line, a one-stop shop for Minnesota seniors, at 1-800-333-2433. That's 1-800-333-2433.
The clock is ticking. If you were sexually abused as a child, you must act and act now before May 25th, 2016. Contact our law firm, Jeff Anderson & Associates, at 651-227-9990.
Sensory sensitivity, repetitious behavior, lack of eye contact. You can see signs of autism in children as young as 18 months. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
KDAL 610 is streaming, no longer with the steel girders and cement of downtown buildings, keeping you away from Cadigan and Kelly. The John Gilbert Show, Garage Logic, or KDAL News. Find out for yourself. Go to KDAL610.com and click on the Listen Live Now button. Life is busy. Catch up with John's show by downloading his podcast at KDAL610.com. The John Gilbert Show on 610 KDAL.
All right, John Gilbert back here with you on the John Gilbert Show. We're flying through hour two of the show today. Boy, lots of, I think, interesting information. I don't know what you think. Give us a call, 722-0839. Let us know. Talking a little bit about PolyMet. We talked to Lee a little bit. We talked to Tommy Archer about his racing. We talked to Ryan Curran about the high school all-star hockey game. And now it's a pleasure to talk to Scott Hade, who is spokesperson for the Sportsman for the Boundary Waters, and it's an interesting title. Sounds just positive, Scott.
Hey, thanks for having me on, John. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I was gratified to read the details about Mark Dayton's refusal to allow the Twin Metals Minnesota to go on exploring for copper deposits in the Boundary Waters region. And I imagine you were much more thrilled than I was.
Well, I tell you, I think a lot of people were pretty pleasantly surprised and pretty gratified at this position that Governor Dayton announced. I think that letter was dated on Sunday, but I think it hit the news yesterday. So, yeah, I think a lot of people are quite pleased with that.
Well, because it's the first time people have accused him from being wishy-washy. I defend Mark Dayton almost every step of the way because I know that he means well. He's intending to do good things for people and the state and not necessarily for personal achievement and personal pats on the back. So he doesn't always do the popular thing. But this is the first time he's really come out with and made an adamant stand about this. And it's kind of interesting. And of course, the right-wing guys are saying, oh, he's just against the economy and against mining. And of course, he's not, but there's, you got to weigh everything, and you can't allow mining if it's going to be high risk to the environment. And the other thing that I tied together in the first hour this morning, and you're in the Twin Cities, right?
Yeah.
The other thing is that wonderful story Josephine Marcotti did on the front page of the Sunday Minnesota section of the Star Tribune on the whole thing with PolyMet getting the approval to go ahead and seek permits after 10 years of fighting for it. But the interesting thing, she talked to so many people around the country from Colorado School of Mines and business analysts and everything else, and they're talking about how a company at the level of PolyMet, which I have disclosed many times here. It's a Canadian outfit, and B, they've never operated a mine before. So this is their first time running a mine. The other noteworthy thing is there's never been a sulfide mine in the world that has not polluted. And they say with modern technology, they're assured that it won't pollute. And I'm saying, how do we know and why would we trust a company that's never run a mine? Well, this story says a company at that level often doesn't intend to mine. They just want to fight the battle to get the permit. And I likened it to a football team having second and goal from the one and having a mediocre running back crash into the line, knowing you still can come and do a rollout on the next play. And they said the key thing is they try to get the permits, and then that's an asset that they can sell for a ton of money. So it suddenly made me wonder if that's not what PolyMet is up to, even though they insist they intend to mine, but couldn't they just then sell the permits to a company like Twin Metals Minnesota? And they can laugh all the way to the bank then because they got the permits. They don't have to do the fighting. Is that a possibility?
Well, I think that's a possibility when you talk about mining companies on the level of your PolyMet. You're right. The only asset that they really hold is their ability to try to to lease their and to try to get those permits. And if they get those permits, then obviously it would be potentially more valuable to them.
Well, they can either mine or sell the permits. And if you've never mined, then why wouldn't selling the permits be like a really lucrative possibility?
Yeah, I think generally in the world of mining, there are the global big mining companies, the ones that actually put the shovel to the dirt and start getting after the product. And then there's a whole host of these ones that are called junior miners. And essentially, these are very speculative companies. And, a lot of them don't pan out. Some of them make it further than others. And some of them get to the point where, hey, they've got something that might be viable that would attract one of those major companies buying in as a partner that would then, attempt to bring it to fruition and production. So I think that article in the Star Trib over the weekend was pretty accurate. And I think you've explained it pretty adequately here. But I would like to turn things back to Governor Dayton and his position on Twin Metals in the Boundary Waters, because you said, Governor Dayton, I think any politician has a tough job. You're never going to make everybody happy.
Well, before you go on with that, tell me about Twin Metals Minnesota. Now, is that a junior company or is that a big-time company?
That's a fairly small company as well. I mean, what they're really operating on here is these leases that expired actually at the end of 2013.
Okay.
That they're attempting to get renewed right now. The leases are expired, but really that's their only asset. This is another one-trick pony. They're trying to build something along the edge of the Boundary Waters. They are partially owned by Glencore, which was mentioned in one of the articles.
I thought it was a Chilean company.
Oh, sorry. Yes, you got me there. I'm flipping things around. Antofagasta. Yes. They are from Chile.
A huge conglomerate from Chile, which is probably quite profitable.
Their profits rise and fall with the global metals world. So they're probably not doing as well now as they do sometimes when things are better. But it's a company on the scale that could build something. Twin Metals, like PolyMet, is a small company that hasn't done anything on their own before. And again, they're going to be reliant upon big partners from the global mining world.
Okay.
So the development with Governor Dayton is A, very good, and B, very interesting. You said he's maintained a sort of a neutral or a silent position on this. Well,
which means he's gotten hit by rocks from both sides.
Oh, I'm sure he's hearing from everybody all the time. I mean, the letter actually referenced a meeting, I believe it was February 17th, where he met with the folks from Twin Metal. So that's his job. He has to listen to both sides and weigh the pluses and minuses, the benefits and the risks. And I think what he has done expresses his faith in the science, showing that this type of mine, anywhere else that it's been developed in the world, has not been able to be developed without having significant impacts to water.
Right.
So that's one thing that he's relying on. There is a sound science backing to this. But then also, he's a politician, and he pulls his finger in the wind and figures out what the public sentiment is. There's no doubt about it. the public in Minnesota and in northeastern Minnesota believe that something like a sulfide ore mine on the edge of the Boundary Waters is simply too risky to let go forward. And that, like I said, that statewide polling that's in the region, sentiment is that way. And I think Governor Dayton recognizes that, as well as the fact, as I said, that the science bears this out, that they can't point to any mine of this type that's been operated for any length of time or closed down that hasn't resulted in significant impacts to clean water. And if anybody knows anything about the Boundary Waters, what's it all about? Clean water.
Well, and you know, I've got to tell you that up here, I went into this completely neutral because I said, you know, I've known so many people on the Iron Range. I've been covering hockey for my whole career, and even at the Star Tribune when I was there, I always came up to the range and enjoyed those hockey games. So I've known people from the range forever, and mining is such a big part of their lives that I thought, well, it's good to have more mining, but then we can't be risking the environment up there, especially the most pristine place in the world, perhaps. And as you know, they say, you can go into some of those lakes up there, you can dip a cup over the side of your canoe and drink the water. Well, where can you do that in the country?
Not too many places in the country, and certainly the world.
And where would you do that if they allowed this mine to happen?
Well, one fewer place, that's for sure. That's the thing. You know, a mine is not a mine is not a mine. Not all mines are created equal. Some are more dangerous than others. And this type of deposit, this deposit that's high in sulfide content that results in byproduct that has to be stored from now until the sun burns out and stored safely, again, nobody's ever found a way to do that. I don't think people are willing to say that, hey, we're going to get it right the first time on the edge of the Boundary Waters.
Well, and then they say modern technology. And I'm saying, well, the modern technology turns out to be reverse osmosis, which they used 25 years ago with the taconite mines, and it didn't work.
Yeah, and I think, you know, no matter what the issue, no matter what you're talking about, everybody always, you know, says you have to have faith in modern technology, but there's a few things that you could never engineer your way around. And one of them is, you know, an act of God. You know, look what happened with the Fukushima plant over in Japan, releasing
right.
all that nuclear stuff. You can't engineer your way out of human error. You look at the Deepwater Horizon in the Gulf. You look at engineering failures, the Mount Polly mine in British Columbia. That's a relatively new mine, and that tailings dam failed in the summer of 2014. So you can't predict all of this stuff. And certainly when you're trying to do something where you're containing all of this byproduct that's really dangerous, when you're trying to do it in an area that is as aqueous and as wet and interconnected as the Rainy River drainage basin, because this mine would flow, anything that comes out of there would flow north through the Boundary Waters, Voyageurs National Park, Quetico, the Rainy River system. It's not going to stop. It just keeps going. All of that is connected, and it all flows that direction.
The thing that really caught me was when they said, you know, if they were able to keep it in the same pit where the taconite tailings are and it never leaked, which the taconite tailings are leaking, but if they were able to contain it and it never leaked, they said if a flock of ducks came and landed in your lake and then flew off to another lake, then that lake they flew to would be polluted.
Well, I would imagine that is potential if they carry something with them.
Well, landing in the water, which would be filled with the toxins that they're storing there, if they could contain it, you're not going to keep the mergansers out, right? And then they fly to another lake, then that lake is infected with the same toxins. And that's just way too high a risk to take, I think.
Yeah, I think most people, they recognize that the Boundary Waters is an incredibly unique and special national treasure. I think Governor Dayton even used those words. He talked about it being an iconic Minnesota place. It is indeed a national treasure. I think you can go further and say international. It attracts 250,000 people from all around the country and around the world every year who come up there to enjoy this place. I mean, the work that I've been doing over the past year is getting folks who love to fish and hunt more engaged in this thing. And it's so fun to see people at different events. We just did the Duluth Sport Show a few weekends ago, and we had so many people stop by our booth talking to us about, oh, God, the toughest portage that I ever did, or, oh, my
right.
gosh, you know, let me pull up this picture on my phone. Look at this big walleye that I caught last year. Or, you know, just talking about just tremendous trips that they took, going back generations. I mean, this is a place that means an awful lot. Sometimes, I have to admit, sometimes I think Minnesotans almost take the Boundary Waters a little bit for granted. we all talk about up north, and there's a lot of great stuff up north in Minnesota. But when you talk about the Boundary Waters, it is the epitome, the pinnacle up north experience.
Well, that's right. And now, you know, up here, we have this, I don't know how much time you've spent here recently, but, you know, there's local Duluth companies and, you know, restaurants and so forth. I think, I don't know what it's up to, 100 and some now, that are trying to generate support for this. And then up on the Iron Range, some of the people are so determined, saying we got to have mining or else, they almost would sell their souls and say it doesn't matter how much we pollute, we got to have the money. The economic hard times are so strenuous there that you can almost see why they're doing it. But now they're trying to boycott the Duluth companies and restaurants and stuff. And I thought, well, that's amazing, because chances are the Duluth restaurants are gaining more business from the Twin Cities people who appreciate what they're doing than they're losing from the Iron Range people who are trying to say we got to have mining. And it's really a sad thing that they can almost look at and say, so what if we compromise that? Because the number of jobs has been greatly inflated by what these mines would provide compared to the number of resort owners and outfitters and everything else just in Ely alone.
That's true. I mean, the economic thing is certainly, you know, a difficult discussion. And you know, that happens any place where there is a reliance upon resource extraction. It is, by its very nature, a boom and bust type of business.
Right.
The range has seen ups and downs over, you know what, over a century probably that they've been doing stuff up there. So this is, you know, one of those times when things are hard, but you are right. You look at the tourism industry, and it is massive in northeastern Minnesota, and that employs an awful lot of people. So those jobs, what makes those jobs less valuable? And those are long-term sustainable jobs, so long as you don't mess with what makes northeastern Minnesota special, and the Boundary Waters is a very keystone of that region. You can't mess that up, because that puts at risk all of those long-term sustainable jobs in that strong and healthy tourism industry in northeastern Minnesota.
Well, that's for sure. Well, Scott, do you get up here often?
Not as often as I would like.
Yeah.
To say, I do some work in Alaska and things like that, so I travel an awful lot. But I tell you what, my heart is up in the Boundary Waters. My mom and dad, I grew up in southern Minnesota, around Mankato, and my mom and dad took my brother and I up to Ely two, sometimes three times a year since we were probably 7, 8 years old. And we spent so much time in Ely and in the lakes and the Boundary Waters around the Ely area. And this is one that I think is just a complete no-brainer. Why do you want to risk something as specially unique as the Boundary Waters to something that has proven itself to be extremely dangerous and has not been able to be done anywhere else without messing things up?
That's right.
So I think Governor Dayton, to circle back, I think he recognized that fact. I think he looked at the science behind it. I think he's looking at public opinion. And when Minnesotans talk about the Boundary Waters, they don't want to put it at risk.
I agree with you. And Scott, we'll be in touch again, because I know this is going to be a topic that's not going to go away soon. And we'll get in touch again, as soon as anything happens in this. I sure would like to use you as a resource.
Oh, no, not a problem. This is great. Like I said, this is one where the folks that I work with, the folks who love to fish and hunt, I mean, I've got guys who hunt deer in the Boundary Waters, and they will not tell you. They'll go to their grave before they'll tell you the places where they go and shoot some big whitetails.
Right.
So this is great. We've got, you know, Pope and Young, the Bow Hunting Club, on board. We've got Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. We've got Rapala Lures, St. Croix Rod, fishing companies, you name it, they're all coming on board. This is a national treasure, and the sporting community is stepping up for it.
Well, and I appreciate that. Scott Heed, thank you very much. We'll be in touch again. We got to go to a break, and I appreciate the time. Thank you, Scott. We'll be back right after Your Money Now.
Since the 610 KDAL, news, talk, sports.
I'm Jennifer Kishinko with Your Money Now. Stocks are broadly lower. The Dow Industrial's down 89 at 16,984. The NASDAQ is down 36. The S&P 500 off 15. Quite a costly mistake for five-time Grand Slam winner Maria Sharapova. Nike, Porsche, and Tag Heuer have all cut sponsorship ties with the tennis pro after she admitted yesterday she failed a drug test at this year's Australian Open. The world's highest-paid female athlete makes tens of millions of dollars from her many endorsements. Gift cards are starting to feel the pinch of new rules. Some retailers are requiring customers to buy the cards with cash or asking that they show identification. identification, a consequence of new rules that put them on the hook for fraud. And gift cards are a favorite among criminals who pay for them with stolen credit card data. Historically, the cost of that fraud was borne by the financial institutions that issued the cards. Crude oil down $1.03 at $36.87 a barrel. That's your money now.
All right, people, let's start the meeting off with a round of quick-fire questions, shall we? Whoever gets the most correct answers gets tomorrow off. First question, what's the most efficient way to manage our expenses?
Concur.
How can you capture invoices electronically and manage approvals from anywhere?
Concur.
Last question, by switching to blank, we now have the tools that give us full visibility into company spending, which helps our bottom line.
Concur.
Bob, very impressive. You get tomorrow off.
But tomorrow's Saturday.
You get tomorrow off, Bob.
Thank you.
Expense, travel, invoice. Learn more at concur.com.
In my line of work, I'm trying to make a difference. Not $1 billion, but I do want to be able to save for the future. So this year, I partnered with TIAA to help me map out what I should be doing. Together, we came up with a personalized plan for my finances. And now, it seems like a life of rewarding work just might pay off for a lifetime.
See how we're helping those who do good do well at the new TIAA.org. TIAA, created to serve, built to perform.
Hello, garage logicians across the Twin Ports. This is the mayor, Joe Souchere. Catch Garage Logic from 1 to 3 weekdays on KDAL 610.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com. You can post your job to 100-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 400,000 businesses. And right now, listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/talkradio. That's ZipRecruiter.com/talkradio. One more time. To try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/talkradio.
Look for the 6 o'clock hour of Cadigan and Kelly simulcast on another familiar friend, KDLH Channel 3, the very same TV station which was 610 KDAL's roommate at the venerable broadcast center, working together again. Call John now at 722-0839 or 888-KDAL-610. The John Gilbert Show on 610 KDAL.
You can go back to that. John Gilbert, finishing up the John Gilbert Show. Been quite eventful today. Lots of stuff going on, and almost too much. We need another hour. David Kuharski, we got to give us another hour. I got one for you. Here's an item that you need to soak in. A lawsuit has been filed that accuses an athletic director of a college of unfairly removing female coaches and the top women's sports administrator during a tenure marked by gender bias. The lawsuit asks the judge to order reinstatement and to require the university to take steps to ensure that female coaches are treated the same as their male counterparts. It alleges that 6 female coaches and the department's most powerful female administrator have been forced out. Now, this is not the University of Minnesota Duluth, which could be accused of almost the same words. This is the University of Iowa, and the accusation is Athletic Director Gary Barta of unfairly removing these coaches, filed by women's field hockey coach Tracy Griesbaum and most powerful administrator Jane Meyer. So it shows that UMD may have its troubles in the court action coming up, but they aren't alone. Other schools have done the same thing, and gender inequity seems to still be riding high in the male world of athletics. We will be back tomorrow. Get out tonight, see that all-star hockey game at Amsoil Arena. Skills contest at 6 would be really fun. And then the game itself at 7, Iron Range against Duluth. high school hockey all-stars. It'll be really fun. Talk to you tomorrow, 9 to 11, on the John Gilbert Show.
AM 610 KDAL, Duluth Superior, news, weather, sports.